This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Jonathan Tapp, special agent in charge of the FBI New Orleans field office. We'll be talking about Operation Restore Justice. Mr. Tapp was appointed as acting special agent in charge on February 27th of this year and was the permanent now and was named that on May the 4th. It's his second stint in the city of New Orleans. So, we can call him a New Orleanian for sure. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon. Pleasure to be here.
So tell us about Operation Restore Justice. I know it's a nationwide initiative, if you would.
Yes, sir. You betcha. Our Operation Restore Justice was a nationwide surge of resources from all of our 55 field offices to arrest and charge child predators. Together, we're protecting children and bringing predators to justice. Each of our field offices had 5 days between April 28th and May 2nd to plan its enforcement action. And it was all in coordination with our U.S. Attorney's offices here in Louisiana in the Western, Middle, and Eastern districts. Here in Louisiana, we arrested four of the 205 total subjects who were arrested nationwide. Three of those arrested here in Louisiana were arrested in Alexandria during one of our undercover operations with Louisiana State Police and the Alexandria Police Department.
Wait, if you could, for the benefit of the listening audience, describe these individuals, meaning, you know, their criminal history and the conduct that they engaged in.
Yes, sir. So I don't have the criminal histories of those four folks here in front of me, but I've been in law enforcement 29 years, almost 30. I can give you the recidivist profile. So most sexual predators, especially child sexual predators, are recidivist, meaning they're repeat offenders. So it's likely that these folks are engaging in this type of behavior, exploiting minors online sexually, and some of them are attempting to gain access to children, and those are the most heinous offenders, and we target those first.
Yeah. And a lot of this leads to trafficking of these individuals as well sometimes, right?
Yes, sir. Occasionally so.
You have an extensive history of working on gangs, both in Sonora, Mexico, and in other areas of the world. If you would, talk about this intrinsic link that exists between these gangs and child sexual predators and child trafficking.
Yes, sir. You betcha. So for gangs and particularly the Mexican drug cartels, They are in it to make money. So particularly for the cartels, if it's profitable and illegal, they will engage in it, and that is one form of illegal activity that they engage in. For my history, I was Kentucky State Police 8.5 years. I was a road trooper, and Kentucky State Police is nearly identical to what you have here in Louisiana, except for when I went to detectives, there's no CID in Kentucky, at least wasn't, it's been 21 years ago, but I was a general investigations detective for a couple years after 5 or 6 years on the road, and then I left as a sergeant and had 5 or 6 sections, including our sex offender registry there in Kentucky, where we would ensure compliance, and those who didn't comply went back to the grand jury. My experience with gangs in the FBI began on day one, so I've been with the FBI for 21 years. I've served all over the country and the world. My first assignment was out of our Denver field office, where I began working basically cartel cases. We now call that transnational organized crime in the Western Hemisphere. A lot of us still call it just drug work. Most of that was Sinaloan cartel targets. Then I transitioned to working gangs in Denver, and you have all kinds. You have neighborhood-based gangs and national gangs and transnational gangs, whether it's MS-13, Crips, Bloods, all kinds. They're all over Denver. I did that for about 3.5 years, mostly running sophisticated techniques, wiretaps to take down larger organizations and maximize our law enforcement impact against those criminal organizations. After about 3.5 years, I transferred to Austin, Texas, and I started working in the reverse there. So I started with gangs and wound up working cartels. And at that time, this is mid-2000s, we were overrun with Gulf cartel targets. And then that shifted a bit to La Familia, which is now the new La Familia out of Michoacan, state of Michoacan in Mexico. Then I worked 2 years in Mexico, in Hermosillo, state of Sonora. Again, mostly Sinaloa cartel, Beltran Leyva organization targets. Then I was the supervisor in Las Cruces, New Mexico, covering southern New Mexico. And again, you have gangs, a lot of them originating out of Juarez, which is right across the border, and being criminally active there across the border in El Paso and Las Cruces. I did 3 years working Indian country, which is really analogous to what I did in state police. You're working sex crimes and death investigations. There I did it on the Nez Perce Indian Reservation for 3 years. I left there to be our legal attaché in Panama. We covered Panama, Costa Rica, and Nicaragua, so did all FBI programs there. And then I was the gang and we call it the drug supervisor in Salt Lake City. There you have a different set of gangs, and back to the Sinaloa cartel. From there, I finally arrived here in New Orleans, where I covered violent crime, and our resident agencies are satellite offices. So here in New Orleans, out of this office, we cover the entire state of Louisiana. We have a headquarters city office here in New Orleans proper, and 6 of those resident agencies in Shreveport, Monroe, Alexandria, Baton Rouge, Lake Charles, and Lafayette. I was 2 years here working gangs, violent crime, narcotics enforcement. Go ahead.
If I could interrupt you, we're visiting with Jonathan Tapp, special agent in charge of the FBI New Orleans field office. You've outlined the extensive experience that you have in dealing with gangs. And, you know, I served 40 years in law enforcement. And it's interesting when you talk to people out on the street, they're intrigued, but they don't really understand the breadth and depth of what happens within this gang culture. I wonder if you could just take a few minutes. You seem to be exposed to La Familia, Sinaloa, MS-13, probably Trinidad y Tobago. The common thread that runs through these gangs and just how bad they really are.
Yes, sir. You betcha. So the common theme is these gangs, they rule within the gang through violence and outside of the gang through violence. So our neighborhood-based gangs, national gangs, and transnational gangs are involved in, our, you know, their criminal activity runs the gamut from illegal narcotics trafficking, illegal firearms trafficking, trafficking in human beings, and sex trafficking. Those are the top criminal violations, and they enforce rules within their gangs through violence, and they occupy territory through violence. Most of that is through the use of illegal firearms, and they have many wars between each other, and we attack them as organizations from law enforcement. And you know how it works, Newell, having been the sheriff. We work strongly with our partners, whether it's, I don't want to leave anybody out, but Louisiana State Police, Jefferson Parish Sheriffs, New Orleans PD here locally, and across the state, and we have fantastic partners, whether it's the governor's office, the attorney general's office, the Shreveport PD. They are all strong partners, and we don't do anything here alone.
You know, this culture in the gang, you know, there's a lot of argument going on about tattoos and branding oneself as being a member of a gang or not. My experience tells me, and especially working with the narcotics division of my former office, that if you tat yourself as a member of a gang, it's a better bet than Secretariat that you are a member of that gang, because if you tat yourself and you're not, they'll kill you.
Yes, sir.
Is that a fair characterization?
Gotcha.
You know, I'm just kind of, you know, intrigued by this debate that's going on across this country, and they don't really talk to people like yourself that have been working, you know, inside and around these gangs good portion of your career. You don't just casually tat yourself as a member of a gang and get away with it, right?
No, sir. No, and particularly, I mean, you can pick any gang out, but if you or I marked on our chest MS-13 and we were not actually part of that gang, then we would suffer the consequences.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as if, I don't know what your reaction to it, you know, a lot of the discourse that's going on about these gangs today, and we've almost glossed over the violent nature of these gangs. I mean, these people don't care about anything, you know? I mean, it's just... And,
no, sir, you're exactly right. The typical gang structure operates on violence, and they have very little care for human life.
And, you know, it's interesting what's going on in Mexico. I mean, I just kind of, your experience, is it possible to sit down and negotiate with these people?
With the yes, sir, you betcha. If we have them in handcuffs and we're sitting across the table from them.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but I mean it's like these folks that there's no moral compass, right? There's no guiding light in their life other than violence, money, drugs, sex, right?
That's exactly right. No, our negotiations are the consequences of state or federal sentencing following an adjudication or somewhere thereabouts.
So you began working with them back in the early 2000s. If you go back then and you look at it now, do you see any significant difference?
Yes, sir. You betcha. Communications have phenomenally changed. When I started doing wiretaps, we were wiretapping pagers, and they don't exist anymore, as far as I know, unless you have one. And no offense if you got a pager on your hip, but
no, I haven't.
Our communications have rapidly evolved, exponentially.
Right. They, I'm sure they're, you know, communicating in an encrypted environment, making it difficult to be, you know, picked up by federal authorities or otherwise, right?
You betcha. And if you, you know, everybody's probably seen the old mafia video of covering your mouth when you talk so that we can't see what you're saying. Well, that's yesterday's encryption. Today, it's a technological advancement, but you're absolutely right.
Is there any marked difference in the level of violence or the way they carry it out?
There's certainly more violence now. I think that's undeniable.
And in the modus operandi of how they do that, I mean, is it different today? I mean, I know it sounds like a silly question, but it seems to me that in many respects, it's a lot more brazen. They're a lot more secure in themselves and what they do and their landscape and in the manner in which they garner control over pieces of geography.
Yes, sir. I would say that's certainly situationally dependent. So
yeah,
some places the gangs operate much more in a covert manner, whether that's because there are, you know, the community is an impermissible environment or law enforcement is a lot more proactive. It just depends on the environment, and it varies street to street.
Yeah. Let us go back real quick to this Operation Restore Justice. It was a very short period of time that y'all were working on this. You have over 200 I think over 200 folks were picked up nationwide. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. 205.
Now, you know, most people would sit back and say, well, that doesn't seem like a big number. But when you're talking about child sexual predators, the victim impact of removing these folks is huge, right?
Yes, sir. You betcha. I mean, if you can imagine, as you said, that the impact on a child is devastating, and that perpetrator is going to victimize more children. So the more we can get off the streets, the more children we're protecting.
Yeah, absolutely. Special Agent in Charge Jonathan Tapp, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back to the City of New Orleans. Congratulations on being named permanent SAC on May the 4th, and look forward to meeting you.
You betcha, sir. Thank you very much. I'm the most fortunate FBI agent to be here, so it's my pleasure.
Absolutely. All right, and if y'all ever need anything from us to get any information out or otherwise, please do not hesitate to call.
You got it, Newell. Thank you very much.
All righty, sir. Have a great weekend. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
With us, folks. Folks, there's been daily updates as it relates to President Donald Trump's visit to the Middle East. He was in Qatar the other day, his second stop on a tour of the Middle East. And he's been welcomed in a very overt way and actually in a kind of an incredible way in each one of his stops in the Middle East. But negotiating deals, but what are these deals really all about? And Victoria Coates, Vice President of the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy with the Heritage, joins us. Victoria, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on.
So, you know, there's a lot of hoopla about what's going on in the Middle East, but not a lot of reporting on a granular level as to what we're actually accomplishing. You posted a piece talking about building on the Abraham Accords that no one ever thought that the Trump administration, his first time around, was going to be able to achieve. He did so. Is that what a lot of this is about?
I think that's exactly what the president is signaling here. And if you go back to his first trip in June of 2017, look what he did, because official presidential travel is planned way in advance. It's designed to send messages to set up policy successes down the road. And he went from Riyadh to Jerusalem to Rome. He went to the centers of the three Abrahamic faiths, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. And that was unprecedented. It was a historic flight from Saudi to Israel that had never been done before, particularly by something so public as Air Force One. And, you know, it was a little shocking at the time, but that was the message the president was sending, as he was going to break those old taboos and those old bigoted norms against contact between Israel and Arab neighbors. So that is what started to change the paradigm. And we got to the Abraham Accords at the end of the first term between Israel and UAE and Bahrain and Morocco. And so this time, I think what the president was doing was saying, you know, I am open for business. And he took 30 CEOs with him. This has never happened before. That the president would travel with people like Ronald Lauder and Stephen Schwarzkopf and Larry Fink and Jane Rosen, or Fraser rather, from Citicorp. I mean, this is incredible. And I think what he's saying in this trip is, we are going to bind you, wealthy monarchies of the Gulf, to the United States through finance and technology. And that's the American deal of the century.
You know, the interesting thing about this, a lot of folks say that the October 7th terrorist event in Israel took place because there were those, Iran in particular, were really concerned about the coming together of Arab nations, the Israelis and the United States, as a result of the Abraham Accords. And one would think that there's probably no better time than right now, as you pointed out, to revisit that and send a message that they're not going to be deterred as long as the Arab nations are willing to sit at the table with these folks. And it seems as though they are.
I think so. so. And regarding October 7th, that was very much the brainchild of Yahya Sinwar, the deceased leader of Hamas in Gaza, who after the 2021 war, when Israel was able to effectively neutralize all the rockets he was firing at Israeli civilians out of Gaza using Iron Dome, he realized he needed a different kind of attack. And he started thinking at that point about what would become October 7th. But certainly his planning was accelerated by persistent rumors that the Prime Minister Netanyahu and the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman were considering normalizing relations. I would say despite the interference of the Biden administration, which was not close to either Netanyahu or MBS, but they wanted to do it. And I do think the Iranians panicked at that point. And the Biden administration had not been focused on collecting intelligence on the Iranian proxies that might have revealed this plot. And the guard was down. So that horrible thing happened. But what's been amazing to me, and I just got back from Israel 10 days ago, is the fact that the Abraham Accords have endured through over a year of war, which, you know, was designed to disrupt them. Trade between UAE and Israel expanded last year. We met with UAE's fantastic ambassador to Israel, who's still in his post. When we were there and, you know, posted pictures online, and it's all very public and above board. So I think, you know, that is a really, really hopeful sign. And, you know, despite the horrific nature of October 7th shows that, you know, President Trump, as you said, is not going to let that hold us hostage. He's going to keep building on successes and bringing our partners and allies together.
It's interesting. You don't hear what you just talked about much in mainstream media at all, right? I've not heard. I hear you chuckle, but I mean, that's quite the accomplishment that it has survived, right? And there's still the willingness, in spite of a lot of uncertainty, that they hope to achieve with that horrific nature of October 7th.
No, it really is. And, you know, our friends in the legacy media, you know, for them, the narrative is that Trump is a grifter. He doesn't understand diplomacy. He doesn't understand international relationships or diplomatic norms or whatever you want to call them. And I think that's a good thing. That may be true. And I think it stands in good stead. Rather than bad. But for them, the notion that Trump saw his way through an intractable problem. You know, we had John Kerry lecturing us in 2016 that there could be no normalization deals until the Palestinian situation was solved. And President Trump, after trying to solve the Palestinian issue, I mean, he didn't give it a try. I was part of that for a year. But he said when he couldn't get the deal, he's like, I'm not just going to keep wasting time on this. Who does want to make a deal? And that's when UAE and Bahrain and then later Morocco raised their hands and said, you know what, we're not going to give them a veto either. And we had progress. And that is, you know, very, very hard, I think, for legacy media to agree, to understand. You know, for them, they were much more comfortable with President Biden and, you know, Anthony Blinken and Jake Sullivan, the people who worked for him, much more traditional, you would say, establishment foreign policy types. And President Trump is going to have none of that. And so, as I was saying before, his big innovation this time is economic diplomacy, that he's going to bring the most powerful tool the United States has, more powerful than any weapon. And that's saying, you know, that's even while we have the most powerful military in history, his most powerful weapon is our economy. And what we can offer in terms of that and technology, and he brought that with him. And, you know, that could set up this extraordinary flowering of economic commerce between the Persian Gulf. He apparently has gone back on calling it the Arabian Gulf because a lot of Persian Americans actually think it's part of their heritage as well. So I'm going to stick with that. But that these wealthy, growing, dynamic countries, he's going to bind those to the United States.
What's interesting is the same legacy media, they don't argue the point that we didn't really achieve a whole lot of successes with the traditional diplomatic landscape that we have created in the United States, right?
No. And I think that is an important point on both sides of the aisle, because we have a lot of establishment Republican foreign policy types who are also deeply disapproving of what President Trump is doing. You need look no further than, Peggy Noonan's column in The Wall Street Journal today, in which she is deeply dismissive of this trip and what the president is doing. And that is literally the Republican establishment speaking there. And so, I think those of us at the Heritage Foundation, who, rather than being establishment Republican foreign policy people, we see ourselves as conservative national security people. We see this as a huge opportunity and are extremely supportive of what the president is trying to achieve here for our country, which will make us more safe and make us more prosperous. And that's just common sense. That's not some kind of magic formula. But as I said, the establishments on both sides of the aisle can't see it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, when you think about moving into Europe, just for a second, if you don't mind. The German chancellor announced, I think it was yesterday or maybe this morning, that their target is now on defense spending of 5% of GDP, which is far greater than what President Trump ever asked for. But when he actually backed these NATO allies in a corner as to what their spend was going to be, and now that they're facing the reality of what's going on in Ukraine, it seems as though there's a lot more willing players and partners revealing themselves.
It really is. And it was interesting to me because after the dust up in the Oval Office with President Zelensky, you had Germany and some others come out and announce they were going to increase defense spending as if this was an act of defiance against the United States, that this was somehow telling Trump off. Like, well, it's exactly what he wants you to do. And I don't care why you do it, as long as you do it. And
that's an interesting spin.
I mean, we had to laugh looking at the Twitter feeds of people like Kaya Kallas, who's the chief EU diplomat, saying we're stepping up. It's time for a new leader of the free world. Like, OK, go to town. There are more people in Dallas than there are in Estonia.
I think he said all along, the U.S. needs to back out of that leadership role. Yeah. Y'all need to take a more proactive role in the future of your homeland, right?
That's it. And the thing is that the United States has been at 3.5% of GDP on defense spending. And as the largest economy in the group, that is a powerful pile of change. And yes, we probably should do more. We should look at ways to do it more efficiently. But the reality was the next largest economy, so we're talking the UK, Germany, Italy, France, Canada, at 1.38%. These countries were all barely at 2%, if not well beneath it, as Canada, Italy, Netherlands have been. Spain also is in that group. And it's great the countries like Estonia are at 3.5 going to 5 already. That's wonderful. But as I said, there are more people in Dallas than there are in Estonia. That is a percentage of GDP is admirable, but it's not enough money. And so I think to have a country like Germany come out and say, we are actually going to do this, and to have the rest of Europe not react in horror, as would have been the case 80, 100 years ago, that is progress for Europe, and it's necessary in advance of the upcoming NATO summit in The Hague in July. We're actually sending observers from Heritage for that. We want to see actual material progress on the part of the Europeans, not just pledges. We want to see money on the barrelhead. We want to see contracts being signed, and we want to see defense industrial bases being expanded. So it'll be very interesting to see how all this plays out.
Yeah, and I think the other importance of that, and I think you would agree, is that, Germany is really kind of the leading country of the EU, right? So when you're talking about the economic side of all of this, it sends a strong message and is emblematic of maybe where, the EU collectively and collaboratively together will begin to figure out what they're going to be doing as it relates to fiscal policy and and certain policies within Europe that are going to be helpful to achieve that 5% spend. Your thoughts?
No, I think it is absolutely necessary. And the conversations we've had with them, particularly during the transition, but even during the first 100 days of the second Trump term, I mean, they'll come to you with, you know, tears in their eyes, wringing in their hands, saying, please don't let them leave NATO. And my response is, that decision is in your hands. You are the ones who are deciding that. And if you all get your act together and do what you said you would do more than 10 years ago in terms of investing appropriately in your defenses, then we will be right here with you. But we can't care about Europe's security more than Europe does, especially when we also have to care. We are not just an Atlantic country. We are also a Pacific country. So we have to care about the Pacific, and we have to care about the Middle East much more materially than Europe does. That's why the president's first trip went to the Middle East. He knows how important that region is to us. So I think if Europe is serious about this, we can have, you know, a real revitalization of the transatlantic relationship, or revitalization of NATO, that will be really good for all of us. But they have to have skin in the game.
We're visiting with Victoria Coates, Vice President of Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage. This whole jet thing, there always seems to be a sidebar with President Trump that, you know, that is a friction point, not only for Democrats, but for Republicans as well. There's some recent reporting about this certain Qatari sheik who actually has had control of that plane, for the royal family, who's got a dubious past, to be kind, at best. Your thoughts?
No, I think it's an unfortunate distraction, because I think the president's message in going to all three of the wealthiest Gulf monarchies was to send the message that America needs all of you, and we need you together. And hey, by the way, Qatar, we are a better partner than Iran, which is 100% the case. So I think that was the message. I think the offer of the plane was a sincere one. Obviously, massive contracts with Boeing were just signed by Qatar on this trip. This is a Boeing plane that they had that they don't need anymore. Boeing, in all of its glory, is not going to be able to deliver the Air Force One that was supposed to be done, I think, last year until 2027 or 28 at the earliest, and that's probably going to run long. So, you know, this was an offer, and it kind of caught the president's fancy. You know, we hand out all sorts of free stuff around the world as the United States. Why shouldn't we get something in return? But I think unfortunately it's become a distraction. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to do about it. Ultimately, having traveled on the plane that's most usually, I mean, whatever the president flies on is Air Force One. The plane he most usually flies on, having flown on that plane, it isn't great. He's not wrong that it's not a terrific advertisement.
It's pretty damn old, isn't it?
This would be. Yeah, it's pretty old, and it's not very comfortable. And either for him or anybody else, I've seen cabinet secretaries sitting at the conference table sleeping, you know, with their heads on the table. You know, that's just not a great look. So all of those things are true. But because Qatar is sort of a hot button topic right now, I think, as I said, this is a distraction. Hopefully they'll just get past it and the rest of the trip can really shine through.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think at the granular level, there are some great things that are being accomplished there. And more importantly, as you pointed out, this building on the Abraham Accords, sending a message. And it's really kind of tightening the grip around Iran, I think, as you pointed out earlier, that's, you know, the byproduct really is the indirect, or actually not indirect, direct byproduct of all this effort, right?
Absolutely. And the other thing I'd raise is the meeting between President Trump and the new president of Syria, whatever he calls himself today. He keeps changing his name. I call him al-Gawlani because that's what I've known him as for all these many years, when he's been actually a sanctioned terrorist on our Rewards for Justice program. Extraordinarily, the sanctioned terrorists met with both the Saudi crown prince and the president of the United States in Riyadh this week, in a very clear message to Iran that they are out of Syria. The United States and Saudi Arabia are in, And in terms of, you know, the sort of nature of this individual, there is no person on the planet who has more reason to fear ISIS than Mohammed bin Salman. They are a direct threat to him physically, personally. And if he is comfortable with al-Gawlani in this role and sees a strategic advantage to it, then I think President Trump is right to take his counsel and see this as an opportunity for America to keep the Iranians and the Russians, I would add, out of Syria and to establish another potential friend for the United States and even another potential member of the Abraham Accords, which 6 months ago would have seemed like pie in the sky. But now it's possible. And so that is progress.
Not to make light of it, but politics has strange bedfellows and foreign diplomacy probably does as well, right?
Indeed.
Sometimes for us, unlike you, because you're in it every day, it's a head scratcher.
it's a head scratcher to be for us as well. But you try to look for the silver linings when you can find them.
Absolutely. Victoria Coates, Vice President Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage. Really enjoyed this conversation. Have a great weekend and thank you for joining us.
Thanks. You too. Take care.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
With us. So, folks, Chief Anchor Patrick went to the mic and talked about the urgency of the public's health help, relative to the 11 escapees from the jail, 11 inmates escaping, two are back in custody. It was obvious that the chief was a little irritated with the notification process, not giving her agency immediate notification, and she should be. And I'm actually very proud of the fact that she went to the mic and said what she had to say and made it perfectly clear that the exigency here was critical and that they needed to know. There's no one around that have more people on the streets than her organization, right? And why this communication breakdown, I don't know. Y'all know where I stand with Sheriff Susan Hudson. I'm not a fan. I'm not ever going to be a fan. I'm hoping that the field of candidates matures, and there's going to have some opposition. She's running again in the fall of this year. I really believe that it's been a disaster, and we'll see where all of this plays out. But it's another example of dropping the ball here. And, you know, it's one thing about notifying the public immediately, but your law enforcement partners have to be put on notice right away, because they're the only ones that are going to give you the force multiplier to go out there and try and get your hands around these knuckleheads that have escaped. And these are violent criminals, right? Violent. That's all. That jail's full of violent criminals. Not residents, criminal inmates. Let's set the record straight. At least for once, maybe. We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot. Welcome back, folks. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, the president is on his way home. We'll talk about his criticism of Bruce Springsteen and things that Bruce Springsteen said on stage in London.
All right, Scoot's headed your way on Free for All Friday. Stay tuned. Have a great weekend.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.